supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Two senators from our region are leading the battle to protect Special Counsel Robert Mueller from being fired by President Donald Trump. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. WHYY Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo reports on the bipartisan proposals that are making some Republicans squirm.
The Capitol erupted with whispers and energetic, highly partisan TV interviews from lawmakers of all stripes after Mueller announced he secured a guilty plea from a former Trump campaign advisor who admitted to lying about his contacts with Russian officials. Many lawmakers fear the president will fire the special prosecutor, which is why Democratic Senator Chris Coons of Delaware is sponsoring a bill that would allow Mueller to contest being fired.
I think it's more important than ever that we send a signal that the legislative branch is going to insist that the executive branch follow rule of law.
Former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon has reportedly been talking to the president and urging his administration to withhold documents from Mueller. Coons calls that dangerous.
Bannon has said a lot of troubling things. That certainly suggests an intention to... he is urging people to obstruct justice and to undermine an active investigation. I think Republican leaders and the administration would be wise to ignore Bannon's call to obstruct justice.
Coons teamed up in the effort with Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina, who says he has no fear that Trump will fire Mueller. For Tillis, it's all about Congress taking the driver's seat.
To me, this is a part of a process of things that I intend to do over the next few years that relate to Congress asserting itself where we think we should. It has nothing to do with who's in the White House right now.
Democratic Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey is pushing a proposal that differs slightly from the Coons proposal. While Coons wants post-firing review, Booker wants judicial review before the president can get rid of a special counsel.
There's something that's not right with this law that gives such an imbalance of power to a president, who, regardless of who that president is, in their ability to unilaterally order the acting attorney general, the attorney general, to fire a special prosecutor.
Booker's bill is also sponsored by influential Republican Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. Walking with a flock of reporters chasing him in the basement of the Capitol, Graham explained that he isn't afraid the president will fire Mueller.
There's no evidence, no suggestion at all that the president's going to do anything with Mueller. Quite the opposite. All I hear is that, you know, Mueller is going to continue to do his job. If that's just all I know. I mean, trust me, I don't believe there's any movement at all by anybody in the White House to get rid of Mueller.
So why is he sponsoring the legislation? Graham says he wants to protect the president from making a rash decision. He says firing Mueller would end Trump's presidency. While Coons and Booker are afraid that the president will act unilaterally to oust the special counsel, Booker says they're also trying to make their bills about more than just this president.
I think that anybody, if you pull out of the politics of this moment, just looks at this objectively, about really sort of checks and balances on presidential power, this is a I think, very common sense, credible way to go for not just this moment in history, but, you know, for 20 years from now, for 40 years from now, for 100 years from now.
With Steve Bannon calling for Trump to set up roadblocks to the Russia investigation, House Republicans from our region are cautiously signaling the White House to let the probe run its course. Congressman Leonard Lance is from central New Jersey.
I believe that the president is being well advised by his attorney, Ty Cobb, to let the investigation proceed, and I believe that that advice should be heeded by the president.
One House Republican is pushing a proposal to limit Mueller's funding to just 6 months. Republican Congressman Ryan Costello, who represents a district covering parts of several counties west of Philadelphia, says that's misguided.
I don't support that. No. Because you don't kneecap an independent counsel who you don't know how they're going about fact-finding or what they may need to do, or there's some strategic considerations behind that. I just don't.
And if these bills do pass, why would President Trump ever sign them? Supporters say they think they can assemble veto-proof majorities. At the very least, they say it would be a strong warning to the president. For WHYY News, Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Given the dangers of brain trauma from helmet-to-helmet contact, would you want your son to play high school football? New numbers from a study of almost two dozen area high school programs provide some insight. Let's learn more with Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Rick O'Brien. Rick, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Good to be here.
A lot of the work that you did looked into technology, specifically helmets. And apparently they've advanced some just in the past 5 or 6 years.
They have. I guess it started in 2003 when Virginia Tech started looking into it more because of CTE, which a lot of NFL players suffer, you know, a brain disease after their playing careers are over. And they came out with a study in 2011, which really forced the manufacturing industry, which is mostly Riddell and Schutt, has 90% of the market, to do a study. And now they have a 5-star rating on helmets for high school helmets. And it's up to the schools, and we wanted to look into how much the schools were doing to make sure to put in the money or the efforts to work with these manufacturers to make sure that their helmets were in top condition or rated the highest, which is a 5-star. Some of them are 4-star. They're all can be certified. You know, there's no concussion-proof helmet, but we wanted to find out what was out there, what schools were employing what helmets.
These better helmets cost in the range of $300 to $400 with sensors. It can go up beyond that. Do most of these programs have the financial wherewithal to provide them?
They do. I mean, it seems like that. The ratings have been good. There's still some schools that could do better. A lot of the schools we found have had 5-star and 4-star rating. We did 28 schools in southeastern PA and New Jersey. There are still some out there with 3 stars and even 1 stars now. While they're certified, they're not the top of the line and they're really not recommended. So it's a kind of learning tool for the schools, too, if they don't have them. But we do have 6 charter schools or public schools that had a 1-star rating on their helmets. But we were told by the executive director of athletics that when schools closed in 2012, there were shuffling of helmets and that they're not using those 1-star helmets that are out there. But those schools, 6 schools, have no 5-star helmets. So maybe that's an area where they could look to upgrade once they see our study.
Do helmets have an average lifespan?
They do. They have a 10-year lifespan that Riddell or Schutt are not supposed to go beyond that, even if it's recertified all those times. But it can, I've been told by both companies, or we've been told that it does have a 10-year lifespan.
No manufacturer claims they have the perfect helmet that will prevent concussions, so the onus also falls on rule changes, coaching, training. What have you noticed in these schools in that regard?
Yeah, very good point. A lot of schools, both in South Jersey and Pennsylvania, have limited the amount of hitting in practice. Some won't do any hitting in practice during the week. They'll use tackling dummies. This is something that Dartmouth came up with. I think the Seattle Seahawks use it. And then they wear a soft cover shell over their helmets, usually during practice, too, if they are doing hitting. And then USA Football has helped some of them learn how to tackle better. They've come in and had presentations with a lot of schools to help learn how to tackle better. Some of them are doing a form of rugby-style tackling, which is like kind of lifting the kid up from the side and taking him down to the ground rather than that, you know, head-to-head or right into the chest.
Though in an overall sense, has helmet technology plateaued? Are these small refinements at this point? Or will there be another whole new generation of helmets?
Well, the one thing that we have is that the Riddell right now uses InSight technology, which is a sensor is attached to the helmet, and it's a wireless thing that it has an alert system. Like a trainer will be at the practices and the games, and he'll know either by a serial number or whatever if a kid takes a hard hit. Doesn't necessarily mean if it alerts that it's a concussion, but he'll be able to go over and check on that kid and look into it and see, you know, say if he's far away, the trainer, the sensor will still, you know, and he doesn't have a good sight line for it, the sensor will tell him, wow, this kid, whoever's name is attached to that helmet, just took a big blow and we need to go over and look at him.
Beyond doubt, we've come quite a way since football players wore leather helmets and NHL players didn't wear helmets at all. Still a ways to go. Thank you so much for your insights on NewsWorks tonight.
It was great being here. Thank you.
Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Rick O'Brien. Over the past year, Therapy Dog started visiting local libraries to hear young children practice reading. From the Behavioral Health Desk, WHYY's Kyrie Greenberg reports that the dogs have become so popular, more librarians across the city are inviting them to their branches.
To read to the dog? This is Rocky. You want to pet him?
Rocky and his handler, Connie Mumper, are new to the Torresdale Library in Northeast Philly, but they are riding a wave of popularity of read-to-a-dog programs in about 10 other branches across the city. Studies show that reading to animals calms beginners and improves confidence in kids reading aloud.
Then he'll want to look in a mirror to make sure he doesn't have a milk mustache.
A year ago, Charlie the Dalmatian began visiting the Andorra Library in Northwest Philly. Here's librarian Molly Vandenhuvel.
I'm forever fielding questions. When is Charlie going to get here?
Vandenhuvel says Charlie usually works one-on-one with younger kids as part of the city's Read by Fourth Grade initiative.
Not only do kids need to build their literacy skills, but many times they'll be called on in school to read out loud, and that can be terrifying for a child that is not an extrovert.
Rocky and Charlie aren't on payroll, though. These good boys and their handlers are volunteers. For WHYY News, Kyrie Greenberg.
Veterans Day weekend ahead, and it's a time for remembering and saluting those who served, and for visiting our nation's monuments to them to pay respects. 15 years ago, one such visitor to the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. was Philadelphian Michael Murphy. Earlier this year, he shared his story of that visit with WHYY's Common Space, our storytelling collaboration with First Person Arts.
It was 2002, and I was in my early 20s, and at that time, I was a bit of a smartass. So were my friends. And we were taking a long weekend. We were backpacking up and down the East Coast, visiting cities and making fun of them. And we were in Washington, D.C. on a Monday afternoon. It was early summer. We went to the National Mall outdoor area, and when we got off the subway at the National Mall, we saw a stage being broken down, and we saw people walking around in uniforms. And we thought, wow, there must be some kind of military thing. Then we realized, oh, yeah, it's Memorial Day. This was 2002. The country had gone to war 7 months before that, and here we are walking around the National Mall saying, oh, yeah, it's Memorial Day. We ended up at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, and as you know, that is a wall. It's a wall of stone, and on that wall are engraved names. There's 58,000 names on that wall of service people and soldiers who died or were missing in action in the Vietnam conflict. We didn't know anybody on the wall. We didn't have any relatives or friends who had died or were missing in action in Vietnam. So we did something else. We did something that you've probably done if you've been there. We went to a little guide they have at the base of the wall, and we looked up our own names to see if our own names were on the wall. Now, I have a pretty common name. My name's Michael Murphy, so I expected to find my name on the wall. I didn't expect it to find it on there four times. There were four Michael Murphys that died in Vietnam. They were all 19 or 20. One of them was married. None of them made it 9 months in Vietnam. It showed when they deployed and when they were killed. And I was pretty shooken up by that because I was in my early 20s and I realized I'd already had a couple more years than they'd had at that point, and I'd done a whole lot. So I went over to my friends who are on a different area of the wall, and they looked up their names, and they were taking a paper etching of one of the names. You can do that. You hold a piece of paper up against the name, you put a pencil over it, and it creates a souvenir. My friend was doing that because his last name was De La Rosa, which is a little less common, and he didn't see very many of those, and he was taking that etching. And as he was doing it, a veteran walks up to us. Older guy, wearing clothes that were a couple sizes too big, wearing a military uniform. Kind of sad, kind of haunted. There was a lot of people there like that. And he said, hey, did you know him? And we said, who? He said, De La Rosa, did you know him? And we said, no, probably not. He might be a relative of this guy, but, you know, we didn't know him personally. He said, oh, well, I knew him. We said, great. He said, yeah, I served with him. I was there the day he died. We said, oh. He said, yeah, 24 of us died that day. And I'll never forget the way he said the word us. 24 of us died that day. It was a hell of a firefight. It was a terrible day. And there's this long pause. We didn't know what to say. And he looks at us, and he reaches out, and he touches the wall. He touches that name, De La Rosa, hard. I mean, you could see his hands turn white, hard. And he says, I come here every year because I got to touch him. And he starts to cry a little, and he says, I got to touch him. And we just didn't know what to say. And looking back on it, I feel like we probably were flabbergasted because he was being so sincere, and we were not very sincere people at that time. But if you think about that, that's pretty foolish, right? Being flabbergasted at someone being sincere at a war memorial on Memorial Day. But the moment passed. He walked away down the wall, passing memorials that people had left that day. And we didn't really say much of anything to him. And now that I'm a little older, and I understand people's experiences more, I really wish there were some things I would have said then. And I wish there were things I could say to him now. I wish I could say, thank you for your service. And I'm sorry about your friends. And I'm glad you made it back. And thank you for telling me your story. And I wish I could say those things now and broadcast it to him so that he could hear it. But I can't, because even though he was talking to us and telling us his story for a couple minutes, we never asked his name. We never thought to ask. I really wish we had.
Michael Murphy is now an attorney and teaches at Drexel University's law school. He says he keeps that etching of his name from the Vietnam Memorial framed on the wall of his den to this day. Be sure to check out Common Space, a collaboration between First Person Arts and WHYY. It airs the last Sunday of each month on WHYY-FM, and you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Philadelphia's Fishtown neighborhood has what might be the oldest Vietnam War memorial in the country. It was erected in 1967 while the war was still raging. WHYY's Peter Crimmins reports the memorial to the neighborhood's fallen soldiers is now 50 years old.
The Charles Glenn Memorial is at the corner of Marlborough and Whidley Streets in Fishtown. Charlie Glenn was 6'3", skinny as a bean, quick with a laugh, and he was a pretty good basketball player. He grew up here, two blocks away, just below Girard Avenue, in the Immaculate Conception Parish.
He was an Immaculate Conception guy, as was I. Holy Name guys were above Girard Avenue. St. Mike guys were above Girard Avenue.
This is John Lonergan. He's the board chair for this memorial site. He says the names of the guys from all these parishes are carved into this memorial.
There's a playground on Front Street called Tip Top. St. Michael's guys would come down to Tip Top and play them down here, and then we'd go up to their playground, which is Hancock up one day. Hancock Street and play them up there. So we intermingled, you know.
After Charlie Glenn died in Vietnam, July 1967, the neighbors immediately set about to make something to remember him by, taking over an abandoned row home on this corner.
They knocked it down, they paved it, and then this was all done by neighborhood people. There were no government or contract, weren't even contractors involved, except the guys who came and laid the stone. You know, they were professionals at their job.
Once that piece of granite had Charlie's name carved into it, the neighborhood held its first memorial ceremony. It was Veterans Day, 1967, just 4 months after Charlie was killed. It was a month later that Lonergan visited the site. It was Christmas, 1967, just before he himself was deployed to Vietnam.
Visiting it in 1967 kind of gave me a chill. I thought, perhaps one day my name will be on that stone. But, you know, you really don't want to believe that. All the guys that I know always thought it was the other guy that was going to get hurt, not me.
Lonergan did get hurt in Vietnam, pretty badly actually, from a landmine, but he survived. Not everyone was so lucky. Within a few years, 10 more names were carved onto the stone, all guys from the neighborhood. Most of them are buried at the Beverly National Cemetery, which is about 15 miles away, across the river in New Jersey. Another board member of the memorial, Joyce Winfelder, says Charlie's mother never owned a car.
Mrs. Glenn would say to me, I don't have to go to Beverly, or whenever I miss Charlie, I just have to walk a couple blocks, and I'm here, and I visit him. I mean, there was a time in Fishtown, people, not everybody had cars. You worked in the neighborhood, you used public transportation. A way to remember your family was to come here.
Now Mrs. Glenn and the parents of all these soldiers have passed on. Almost all of the soldiers memorialized died too young to have children of their own. So 50 years on, there are very few people left who remember who they were. But this weekend, the Veterans Day ceremony will feature one representative of each of the 11 names. That's a friend, a family member, who will speak on their behalf. It's not easy to find these people. Most everyone is dead or has moved away. But Windfelder has had good luck with Facebook.
6 weeks ago, the memorial had 230 friends. We're now over 1,000. So there is an interest. I'm impressed with Fishtown.
Windfelder hopes that interest builds, because technically this lot that the Charles Glenn Memorial stands on is owned by the city of Philadelphia, and it's listed as a vacant lot. Fishtown is changing quickly. While standing at this memorial site, Windfelder is surrounded on all sides by construction crews. Old buildings are coming down, new condos are rising. She says it's not hard to imagine the memorial site could be next.
As Fishtown changes, I don't like the old and new Fishtown talk. We're all Fishtowners. Even if you just moved in last week, you're a Fishtowner. And that this memorial's important because it's history of the neighborhood.
This Veterans Day ceremony begins at 1 p.m. on Saturday. Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.